Christ Church in Ephesus, like all churches, needs leadership. Timothy has been tasked with being the leader, or bishop, of the church. But, as is characteristic of the churches throughout Paul's ministry, membership is expanding, sometimes explosively. As we read in Acts 19:20 regarding the Ephesian church, "So the word of the Lord was growing mightily and prevailing." Even Demetrius, the silversmith of Ephesus, in his complaint to the Chamber of Commerce, said in Acts 19:26, "You see and hear that not only in Ephesus, but in almost all of Asia, this Paul has persuaded and turned away a considerable number of people, saying that gods made with hands are no gods at all." So then, as Paul was leaving for Jerusalem, as recorded in Acts 20, from Miletus, he went to Ephesus and called to him the elders of the church. And when they had come to him, he said to them, "I know that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. And from among your own selves, men will arise, speaking perverse things, to draw away the disciples after them. Therefore, be on the alert, remembering that night and day, for a period of 3 years, I did not cease to admonish each one with tears." With such threats from without and within the Ephesian church, Paul considered it very important to set forth clear standards for its leadership, beginning with the overseers, or shepherds, in 1 Timothy 3, beginning in verse 2. An overseer, then, must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine or pugnacious, but gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money. He must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God and not be a new convert, so that he will not become conceited and fall into the condemnation incurred by the devil? And he must have a good reputation with those outside the church, so that he will not fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Quite a list, to be sure. Nonetheless, given the responsibility given the overseers, Paul was very concerned with those selected for leadership. It is interesting that the requirements begin and end with specific attention paid to the absence of reproach. So, how does one prove a negative? The short answer is, one doesn't. Instead, the examination of an overseer candidate falls to those other than the candidate. A clue about someone determined to be above reproach is found in verse 7, when reputation is mentioned. probably the best question to be asked in this evaluation is, what comes to mind when a person is mentioned? Sort of like the word association test in psychology. The first word brought to mind when a name is brought up speaks volumes about the person. Is the person high profile? If so, what is the nature of the profile? Certainly, the remaining criteria Paul lists should be examined individually, but the sum of the parts leads to the overall perception of the candidate. Sometimes, when a group are talking about a person, the outcome will refer to the person as nice. This is not a bad thing, especially when talking about a potential overseer. Often, less is more. Controversy at any level is not a good thing. If a person has visibility at all, let it be as a model Christian, a little more like Jesus, a little less like me. When writing about deacons, Paul says this, beginning in verse 8. Deacons, likewise, must be men of dignity, not double-tongued, or addicted to much wine, or fond of sordid gain, but holding to the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. These men must also be tested. Then let them serve as deacons, if they are beyond reproach. Women must likewise be dignified, not malicious gossips, but temperate, faithful in all things. Deacons must be husbands of only one wife, and good managers of their children and their own households. For those who have served well as deacons obtain for themselves a high standing and great confidence in the faith that is in Christ Jesus. We've already reviewed the requirement to be above reproach, here found in the heart of the requirements. In Paul's requirements for deacons, however, one stands out. Dignity. Just as Paul lists the nine fruits of the Spirit in Galatians 5:22 and 23, the United States Marine Corps lists 14 virtues of leadership: justice, judgment, dependability, initiative, decisiveness, tact, integrity, enthusiasm, bearing, unselfishness, courage, knowledge, loyalty, and endurance. Number 9 takes us back to the subject of dignity. The British Navy have a similar statement of standards. Be smart and alert in your bearing, and always be meticulous about your dress. When soldiers are in battle, they look around for the ones who carry themselves with the manner and bearing of a commander. so too are those engaged in spiritual warfare against the forces of darkness in Ephesus. Finally, Paul offers a fond hope, sadly never to be realized, saying, "I am writing these things to you, hoping to come to you before long. But in case I am delayed, I write so that you will know how one ought to conduct himself in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and support of truth." He describes the proceeding as a code of conduct for Timothy's spiritual battlefield commanders. Paul lovingly refers to the Ephesian Christians and us as the household of God. He definitively describes Christ's church as the pillar and support of the truth, placing enormous responsibility on us to continue in this vital role. For now, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace.